before sliding the door shut again and taking the chair in front of the desk. This used to be my office, he thought, noting how Morgenthau had tricked up the walls with hollow views of Monet's paintings of cathedrals. You found something of Wilmot's, he asked, without preamble. It was important to make Morgenthau understand who was the chief here and who the underling. Otherwise, she'd flaunt her connections to the Holy Disciples and try to control him. Something that can destroy him, Morgenthau said, smiling devilishly. Eberle hiked his brows, dubiously. Really?
Really?
Morgenthau projected a list of titles against a bare spot on the wall. Each title had a still picture image alongside it. Eberle gaped at the pictures.
Pure filth, Morgenthau said. He watches these disgusting vids every night before he goes to bed.
You're sure? She nodded, grim-faced. Every night. I have it all on camera. Eberle broke into laughter.
We have him, he crowed. We have Wilmot in our grasp. And he clenched both his hands into tight, painful fists.
I may have a concussion. Kananga lay stretched out on the sofa in Viborg's apartment, long legs dangling over the sofa's edge, his head thundering with pain. The side of his face was swollen. Viborg carried a cold towel to the colonel, biting his lips to keep from screaming curses at the blundering idiot, allowing a little slip of a girl to beat him up, to get away. Now she knows for certain that Rivera was murdered. He kept silent, though. In the foul mood he's in, Kananga might decide to throttle me if I tell him what I actually think of him. Where did she go? Where is she now? Viborg said, his voice low, sibilant. That's the important question. You've got to tell Eberle. I've got to? Why not you? You're the one who allowed her to get away. You tell him, Kananga said, his face hard, determined. Viborg didn't try to suppress the angry disdain he felt. Puffing a disgusted breath from his nostrils, he called, Phone. Connect me with Dr. Eberle, wherever he is, emergency priority. Within 10 seconds, Eberle's face appeared hovering in the air above the coffee table. He was smiling happily. Viborg immediately saw that he was in Morgenthau's office. I'm glad you called, Eberle said. I have important news for you both. I'm afraid I have news also, said Viborg. Bad news. Eberle's smile faded. Behind him, Morgenthau looked suddenly concerned. No sense prolonging the agony, Viborg decided. Come right out with it. Holly Lane escaped. Escaped? What do you mean? Apparently she is a martial arts champion. She got away from our good colonel here, Viborg gestured toward Kananga, still supine on the sofa. And we have no idea where she is.
Eberle stared at the three-dimensional image that filled half of Morgenthau's office. Viborg, standing tense and obviously angry, while Kananga lay on the sofa pressing a cold towel to his head. He glanced at Morgenthau, whose expression was gradually changing from puzzlement to understanding. She's piecing it together, Eberle realized. Now she knows that I'm involved in the attempt on Holly's life. Shaking inside with a mixture of fury and fear, Eberle managed to say, I want you both at my apartment in 5 minutes.
Holly ran blindly along the culvert until her lungs burned with exertion. She stopped, bent over, puffing hard. A glance backward showed nothing. He's not following me, she decided with some relief. Probably unconscious, the way I kicked him. Jeeves, maybe he's dead. She straightened up and headed up the embankment into the dappled shadows of the orchard. Serve him right, she thought. He tried to kill me. He must have killed Don Diego. Okay, she told herself. Kananga killed Don Diego. Why? She had no idea. Who do I tell about it? Malcolm? Then she realized that Malcolm had led her to this meeting with Kananga, had suggested it in the first place. Malcolm knew what was going down. He's part of it, whatever it is, she realized. She wanted to cry. Malcolm's involved in Don Diego's murder. He wanted Kananga to murder me. Who could she trust? Who could she turn to? I can't go back to my apartment. They might be waiting for me there. Chris. I'll call Chris. Or maybe Manny. She thought about it as she hurried through the apple trees at the far end of the orchard. Ahead lay rows of berry bushes, and beyond that, the end cap. Not Manny, she decided. I won't go running to him like some helpless little girl asking the big, strong hero to protect her. He probably wouldn't believe me anyway. Chris'll believe me. But should I get her involved in this? She kept on walking toward the end cap, trying to sort out her options and finding out there weren't all that many options open to her. If Eberly is part of this, whatever it is, that means Morgenthau and that slimy Viborg snake are part of it, too. Under the stand of elms at the end cap, Holly sat tiredly on the grass and tried to think. Looking down the length of the green landscape, the habitat seemed exactly the same as it had been the day she and Chris Cardenas had stopped here. But nothing was the same, Holly thought, her inside suddenly hollow. Her whole world had crashed and burned. I wish Poncho were here, she admitted to herself. Ponch would know what to do. Holly pulled out her comm unit and stared at it in her hand. No sense calling Poncho. Take the better part of an hour for a message to get to her. What could I say to her? Help! Somebody just tried to murder me. What good would that do? Chris. I'll call Chris, she said to the comm unit. Chris Cardenas. Nothing happened. Holly saw that the screen was flat and dark. The unit wasn't working. They've deactivated my phone. Why? She asked herself and answered, because they want me to use a wall phone, so then they'll know where I am. They're after me. They want to locate me and grab me. For the first time, Holly felt truly afraid.
Saturn arrival minus 18 days, 6 hours. What's so important that you have to interrupt my dinner? Wilmot asked testily. Eberly smiled at the older man. He had spent the past 2 hours watching Morgenthau's recordings of Wilmot's evening activities. Morgenthau had been disgusted by the professor's choice of entertainment, but Eberly had watched snatches of the vids, fascinated by their mixture of eroticism and savagery. Now he stood in Wilmot's living room, facing the professor's sternly disapproving frown. "We have a serious situation on our hands, Professor," said Eberly. "Well, what is it?" "One of the human resources staff members has disappeared. I have reason to believe she suffered a mental breakdown." "What?" Wilmot looked startled. "Who is this person?" "Holly Lane. You've met her."
"Have I?"
Eberly was keenly aware that Wilmot had still not offered him a chair. The two men were still standing, facing each other, barely a meter inside Wilmot's front door. Inwardly, Eberly was amused. He knew he was keeping the professor from his evening's entertainment. "I suppose I'm partially to blame," Eberly said, trying to sound contrite. "I've been protecting her all these months, but she's finally snapped." Wilmot looked puzzled and more than a little annoyed. Eberly fished his handheld from his tunic and projected Holly's dossier on the wall above Wilmot's sofa. The professor recognized Holly's face.
"She's the one you brought with you a while back."
"Yes." Eberly shook his head sadly. "As you can see, she has a history of emotional dysfunction." He had spent hours carefully rewriting Holly's dossier. "As long as she takes her medication, she's perfectly normal. But once she stops..." Wilmot studied the dossier briefly, then asked,
"Why'd she go off her meds?"
"It's this Diego Romero business. Holly became obsessed by the old man's death. She convinced herself that he was murdered."
"Murdered?"
"It's nonsense, of course, but this afternoon she attacked Colonel Kananga. She tried to kill him at exactly the same site as the old man's death."
"Good Lord! And where is she now?"
"Disappeared, as I told you. Kananga has organized a search for her." Wilmot nodded as if satisfied.
"Very well. It seems that Kananga is doing what he should. But why have you bothered me about this?"
"Because I want you to appoint me deputy administrator."
"Deputy? I don't need a deputy."
"I think you do. You will appoint me deputy administrator so that you can retire from running the habitat."
"Retire? And put you in charge? Ha!
It's not such a ridiculous idea," Eberly said softly. "You will retire, and I will take over your duties."
"Nonsense!"
Once retired,